You can't have a successful major gift program without compelling donor offers. In today's podcast, I talk with Richard and our guest, Teresa Toposi, who leads Veritas efforts helping nonprofits complete our donor impact portfolio. Today, you'll find out how nonprofits are equipping mid and major gift officers to inspire their donors to give significant gifts.
Welcome to the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group, featuring Richard Perry and Jeff Schreifels. Twice a month, we bring you the latest and best thinking about major gift fundraising, so you can develop authentic relationships with your major donors. Here are your hosts, Richard and Jeff.
Welcome to the podcast today. I'm Jeff Schreifels, and I have Richard Perry. And today, we're going to be discussing one of your favorite topics, Richard. Donor offers.
Oh my goodness. I just love talking about this because, it's so critical. It's really, really critical. It's central to the success of major gift programs.
Absolutely. Also today, we're having on as our guest, Teresa Toposi, who is a Veritas client experience leader. And she also leads our work with clients who want to create our donor impact portfolio. We'll get into talking about that a little later. But at this moment, I want to welcome Teresa to the podcast.
Hey guys, so great to be on the podcast with you today. This should be really fun.
Should? No, I'm just kidding. Of course, this is going to be great. Okay, Richard, you and Teresa work closely together in helping clients come up with compelling donor offers. I want to ask you why you believe that donor offers need to be a foundational component of any major gift program.
Well, before I answer that, Jeff, what I'd like to do is just give a definition of what a donor offer is first.
Okay.
So that we're all on the same page. So a donor offer is like a product in the commercial world. A person buys the product and then they part with some money. And they get the product and it delivers a value to them. A donor offer is just like that. It's the equivalent of a nonprofit product, which the donor buys, that's in quotes,
right?
In order to get what they want done in the world, to get the good that they want done, something that's of interest to them. So that's the basic definition. So now that we're all on the same page, the way we view this is that a major gift program without donor offers is like a salesperson trying to sell merchandise from an empty store. I mean, that's just not going to happen. Imagine walking into a store and there's nothing on the shelves. I mean, you wouldn't stay there very long. Yet here's the problem: that most nonprofits are asking their major gift officers to essentially do just that. I mean, they sell the mission and the cause.
Yeah.
Without any concrete programs or projects that the major gift officer can match to the donor's passions and interests. And here's the thing. Today, these up-and-coming donors are demanding more specific offers that align to their interests. They also want to know how their gifts are being used to make an impact in the area that they care so deeply about. And that's the key thing, in the area that they care so deeply about. I mean, so that's what the situation is.
Yep.
And you know, Richard, this is so important that it's actually changed how we start working with any new client. Mm-hmm. It used to be when I started working with a new client, I would help them set up the structure of their major gift program first, setting up the caseload pools, qualifying donors, tiering, strategic plans, all that great Veritas stuff. Mm-hmm. Then we'd work on donor offers. But now in tandem with setting everything else up, we work with the client at the beginning to help create donor offers. And you know, what we found is that creating these donor offers and equivalency language is really critical to getting some of these long-term steady donors to upgrade, especially those who are giving at that mid-level or lower major gift range. Without really sharing the impact of their giving in a tangible way, donors are never really going to understand why it matters if they increase from $5,000 to $10,000. Mm-hmm. You can provide the best donor service in the world, but without this information, eventually your donor giving is going to plateau.
I know. Mm-hmm. So now, Teresa, you mentioned this term equivalency language. What do you mean by that? Explain it.
Oh, yes. So when we say equivalency language, we are talking about taking the program costs for your organization and then taking the number of people or animals or whatever it is your organization does and using those to create a ratio that illustrates the impact that you can share with your donors. So let's say, for example, you have a summer reading program that serves 50 students each for 3 months. And we know the cost of that program is $300,000. You can do some math here to determine that $100,000 is the equivalent of serving 50 students for 1 month of the program. Okay. And you can take it further and say that a $2,000 gift is the equivalent of serving one student for 1 month of the program. And you use this information and divide the costs a few different ways to find equivalency numbers that feel relevant to donors at all different giving levels, even if they are giving unrestricted gifts. So that language really allows the donor at any giving level to understand the impact of their gift.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Don't we also need to change what people think about when they say donor offers? I kind of think that traditionally people think donor offers are a written formal proposal or a case for support. Richard, how do you think we should think about these donor offers? And tell us about the approach using our donor impact portfolio, or as we call it, the DIP.
Yeah, the DIP. That's the acronym we use. Well, the difference in our approach in using the DIP is what is different is that it ultimately will give you the information that you can then sell, in quotes, sell to a donor. But let me tell you how we do this. And Teresa, you can jump in and add some information to this whole thing. But we basically start with all the categories and subcategories of effort that the nonprofit has in executing or fulfilling its cause or its mission. Yeah. There's all the categories and subcategories.
Right.
And Teresa, sometimes, I mean, the number of those categories is just amazing. Like, what are some examples of that? Like we had...
Oh, yeah. We work with some public media stations. And so the categories and subcategories there tend to be all of their programming. So that can get pretty extensive. And you want to list out every single thing you do. You don't want to leave anything off or forget something.
Yeah. And it could be like 200, 280, 310 different individual items.
Wow.
But you're listing all of that because you're trying to capture like, well, here's what this organization does.
Yeah.
Then basically what you're doing is you're taking the budget, the entire budget, including the all overhead, and you're assigning it to those categories and subcategories. And it's not an easy task. I mean, you got to get all these people involved to do this. And sometimes you can't figure out, like, for instance, Teresa, we've had situations where it's like there's a whole bunch of overhead that we don't know how to assign. So, like, talk about how we do that. Like, the overhead that's left over that we can't assign to a specific category or subcategory, how do we deal with that?
Right. So once we've put all of what we call the program costs, including program overhead, then we do have this chunk left over. And what we do and figure out is what percentage of this initial program cost does line item A3 make up? So if that's 3%, then we assign 3% of that remaining overhead to line item A3. And there's where we have the total true cost to put this program on.
Yeah.
Now somebody might be saying, well, I don't agree with you adding that overhead thing in there. Well, our point is that if you didn't have the overhead, you couldn't do the program. And so that's a whole nother point. But anyway, that's the second big point. And then the third thing is to take then each of the categories and subcategories and basically come up with a story that says to a potential donor, here's what the problem is in this that's related to this category or subcategory. Here's what we're going to do about it. Here's how you can be involved. Here's what the cost is. I mean, that's in essence, Jeff, how we go about it. Did I leave anything out, Teresa?
We do also put committed revenue into each of those categories and subcategories as well. So, but that's just committed in writing revenue that we know is coming in restricted for one of those categories.
So that's a good point. So if you have a category, let's say that's $300,000 and you have revenue that's coming in already committed of $100,000, then all you need is $200,000 to actually fund the whole thing. So it makes for a good presentation for a donor to say, you know, to get this thing done that you're interested in, donor, is $300,000. We already have $100,000 committed. We need another $200,000 to really execute the whole thing.
So let's just visualize this, help folks that are listening here. So if you think of a spreadsheet, right, Excel spreadsheet, on one column on the left-hand side, you've got all the projects and programs, subcategories, categories, right? Then you've got the total cost of those, including the overhead in there. So you've got all the costs. And then any money that you've raised against any one of those categories or subcategories. And then the next column is, this is what's left yet to raise money for in each.
Exactly.
Yeah. Correct.
Which is an incredible gift, right? For the MGO or anyone in the organization to know exactly what we do, how much it costs, and what we have to raise money for.
Well, donors are always asking like, well, what does that cost to do that? And invariably what the nonprofit does is they explain what the direct cost is.
Yeah.
And it's not really the whole cost. And that's the problem, which is why nonprofits come up with deficits, because they're only raising part of the cost.
Yeah. Okay. So someone that is listening to this is probably thinking, how do you convince all of these people in the departments to get together and do this project together?
Well, it's not easy, is it, Teresa?
Oh, no, not at all.
So here's what we basically try to explain to folks. So the fundraisers, the frontline fundraisers, actually understand what the story is.
Right.
And usually the development folks, managers and so on, understand, well, here's what we're trying to do. But to program people and to finance people and operations people, we need to explain that the core value here is we're trying to raise more money for program. So right. That's how we appeal to program. And to the finance people, we try to help them understand that money comes from donors. And this is an interesting thing for Teresa and me and the team. It's basically, there's a lot of people that aren't in fundraising that work in a nonprofit that, I mean, they intellectually know that money comes from donors, but they don't actually know how it works. So we explain all of that.
Yeah.
And we help them understand that donors don't just give the general, you know, they did in the past.
Right.
But not anymore. They want to get something done that they're interested in. So that's kind of the way it works.
So you get these folks around a table, essentially finance, the program people, and you lay it all out and you say, this is our mission here. And we've got to work on this.
Well, and we've had some situations, and Teresa can shed some more light on it, where some of program people or finance people just will not cooperate. Mm-hmm. And it's so mystifying to us, isn't it, Teresa? Because it's like, well, what? You're trying to help the donor actually understand what's going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, Teresa, you work so closely with a lot of these organizations, walking them through this whole process. What are some of those common challenges you have when working with them on it?
Oh, yeah. So once you have everyone on the same page, which I honestly think is the biggest challenge, as Richard and I mentioned, there are definitely some more common pitfalls we've seen. Okay. I think the first is really leaving things out. So when you're listing your program categories, you may leave out specific programs because in your head, they're fully funded.
Yeah.
But you still want to account for them, because even if they are fully funded, as Richard says, they're probably fully funded from direct costs, but you haven't really included all of overhead in there. Or when your finance team is entering program costs, they can forget to count some of the program costs because in their head, they're attaching it to overhead. So a great example of that is a food bank who would lump in all their transportation costs as overhead.
Right.
But in reality, those trucks are program costs because they're doing the mission specific task of transporting the food to the different locations.
Yep. Exactly.
And then another one I think I've seen a lot is overthinking the process. Yeah. There's going to come a point in time where you have a great list of program categories and subcategories, but your finance team can't easily divide between these subcategories. And Richard, we've seen finance people going crazy trying to make divisions. Mm-hmm. So we recommend just allocate percentages, you know, just say, okay, each gets an equal percentage within this subcategory.
Yep.
And make sure you make a note of what you've done so you remember to do it later. And then I think the third and kind of most grievous pitfall is really spending this time doing all this work and then not making it a point to share it with your fundraising team so they can use it to create donor offers and equivalency language, or not committing to keep it updated so they can use it for future fiscal years.
Yeah.
It's really hard work the first year, but after that, it gets a lot easier to kind of keep it refreshed, but it's not going to be a useful tool for your fundraising team unless they know how to use it and unless you keep it updated for them.
Yeah. So Teresa, how have you seen this whole process help an organization be successful?
Oh my goodness. In so many ways. Having this information really readily available to a fundraising team has such a positive impact on their efforts. We had one client complete this process and complete a DIP.
Yeah.
And then once they had the understanding of the total true costs of their top 10 priority projects, they were able to create one-sheeters on those projects, as Richard said, talking about the need, and gave those to the MGOs and kind of set them out into the world. And because the MGOs knew their donors and knew their passions, they were able to get most of those projects fully funded for the year because they had that conversation. And it's really amazing what kind of conversations open up when the MGO can share the total true costs with the donor. We also, this is my favorite, had a great example of an MGO whose donor increased from 5,000 to 10,000 at the end of the year. And it was an unrestricted gift.
Yeah.
This is a public media station, and the MGO knew that this donor really loved Antiques Roadshow, don't we all? In her thank you call, she communicated with that donor that her gift of $10,000 was the equivalent of one third of the cost of the whole season of Antiques Roadshow for the station.
Yeah.
And the donor was so elated to hear that. And she immediately responded, well, maybe next year I could give enough for the whole season of the show.
Darn right you could.
Yeah. You know, we've even had some success using equivalency language to get donors to engage in an introductory process. We have this wonderful mid-level team who's been including equivalency language in a follow-up email as a part of their introductory series for their donors. And the point of this is they're including this equivalency language that equates to whatever level this donor is giving at and really shows the impact. And then they're asking their donors to either respond back or schedule a Zoom or schedule a phone call. And they are seeing a nearly 50% engagement rate from donors responding to this email correspondence or booking an appointment, which is unheard of in mid-level. So it's incredible.
Wow. Okay. All right. My final question is, what are some things that organizations should consider before they even start this process?
Okay. Well, I think the most important question goes back to Richard's earlier point. Who needs to be involved and is everyone on board? It's so crucial to understand who needs to be involved to make this successful and ensure that they are willing to actively participate in this process. You will not get it done without all of these different parties. You might also want to think about who's going to own the project and keep it moving. So when we work with clients at Veritas, we work with a leadership lead as well as an administrative lead. So the leadership lead is responsible for getting all the departments on board and answering all of the big picture questions. But the administrative lead is the one who handles the details, handles the scheduling, the disseminating of information, setting deadlines, and keeping everyone on track. You really need people who are going to fill both of those roles to make this project be successful. And then make sure you have a plan for sharing this information when you're done, and a plan for who's going to keep the document up to date regularly, because you don't want to do all this work unless you're actually going to use it.
Yeah. You know, I think the big point here, Jeff, is that donors no longer are just going to fund the operations of the organization. They're just not going to do it. I mean, they want to give to specific programs and projects that they, emphasis on they, are interested in. And so the nonprofit's job is to figure out, you know, what exactly are their programs and, you know, what are those programs and projects? And then what's the total cost of those, of each individual program and project? And then how does that match up to the donor?
Yeah.
So without this donor impact portfolio process, you can't really know.
Yeah, I know.
You just can't know. In fact, how many times, Therese, have we seen an organization not even realize that all they did, first of all, look at all that they did, let alone, you know, how much each of those programs cost.
It's really incredible. Every time we finish that program category step, everyone says, wow, I can't believe we do so much, and, you know, reflect back on that. Let alone when they finish it up and understand the true cost to it. But what's great is when they finish this project, then they know, and they're able to empower their frontline fundraisers to take that information and really inspire people to give at better levels.
You know, Jeff, one thing on that point that Teresa was saying is we had one situation where when they finished the process, a 30-year employee said, my goodness, I didn't know we did that on some specific information. And we're sort of saying, like, what? Okay.
I mean, that just speaks to the power of this whole process.
It is.
Not powerful. Only do you, and the end result is that you empower your MGOs to have great offers to inspire their donors, but through the whole process, it inspires all the people that are working on it and the entire organization and really know, what do we all do? And it's amazing how many people don't even know that. Well, this has been great today. And Teresa, thanks for joining us on the podcast and giving us all this great information. And before we go, as Richard and Teresa said, creating meaningful and impactful donor offers is easier said than done. We'd love to help you create your own donor impact portfolio. And we can guide you toward creating a well-crafted offer. You'll work alongside a Veritas expert like Teresa, who's specifically trained in helping organizations complete this process. Just go to our website, veritasgroup.com/services, and you'll see more information and how to contact us. That's veritasgroup.com/services. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group. Richard and Jeff also write an ongoing blog that you can subscribe to for free at veritasgroup.com. Please join us again next time.